And welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus on this Monday. What is it? March 16th, just shy of St. Paddy's Day. And it feels more like January than it does March out there with temperatures in the single digits to lower teens. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. Bridget, how was your weekend?
Well, I would say things were certainly plenty windy, plenty briskly cold, but we are far ahead of South Dakota, which burned up about 7,000 acres in wildfires near Custer. And then we are now well over 500,000 acres in western Nebraska. I was really hoping those guys got snow instead of wind.
Yeah.
So try to put things out down there.
Boy, I'll tell you, and that's one of the things I wanted to touch on earlier or during the show was that, the wildfires in Nebraska, they're the size of Rhode Island right now. And what's this doing to livestock? Have you heard anything, how much loss they've had in livestock out there?
There's no way they have a head count when a fire's still going on like this. I mean, we still don't have a head count for what happened in Kansas and Oklahoma last month, because you got to think about what are the conditions like right now. Well, we don't have a lot of snow. We have a lot of dry plant material that acts as tinder on the ground. We do not have growing crop, so there's really nothing that's green that would be taking off right now to prevent those fires. And so no matter how they start, and especially with the winds that we've had, they're just going to take off and run. And we have lost buildings. There was a death in death in Nebraska over the weekend with that wildfire. Fences, fence posts, fence lines, homes, evacuated towns, and we will have innumerable head of cattle that were lost in those fires. So unfortunately, that is the way Mother Nature works. If a fire takes off, it's on its own.
Yeah, no doubt. And unfortunately, not a lot of rain in the forecast for those areas either, and more wind coming with record-setting warmth. So that's not good for areas to our south. Now for us, we're looking at more snow in the forecast, but we're also looking at much warmer weather right around the corner as well. For the rest of today, though, it's feeling more like January out there. Plenty of sunshine. Winds will start to lighten up a little bit, and temperatures are in, as like I said, the upper single digits to lower teens. We'll make it into the low to mid-teens today with the northwest wind 10 to 20 diminishing as we head towards evening. And then another cold one tonight, single digits, both above and below zero. And then clouds increase as we head towards sunrise. That will lead to a cloudy Tuesday. We've got a warm front that's pushing into the area. That will trigger off a band of snow, most of it light. And your morning commute, will be fine tomorrow, but your afternoon and evening commute going to be a little bit on the slippery side, as we're expecting about 1 to 2 inches of snow, mainly in the eastern third of the state. And that will exit the area, and then we commence on our warm-up for the rest of the week with highs in the low 40s Wednesday, warming up into the 50s by Friday, and then we're in the 30s and 40s, it looks like, for the upcoming weekend, with cooler weather trying to settle in Sunday into Monday, and no big storms on the horizon, although the LRC does have something that could be cooking towards about the 25th, 26th of this month, so later next week. And in fact, starting next week, into the first week in April, we're going to be on that up and down kind of roller coaster ride that we've got right now. So we're going to get a nice push of spring weather, and then old man winter makes a return, then a push of spring weather. So this roller coaster ride continues for the next couple of weeks. We're not quite done with winter, just when you think we are. Mother Nature has other ideas, but at least we're going to see a little more moisture into the area over the next couple of weeks. Not a whole lot until, again, we'll see what happens next week and into that first week in April, where the LRC has a couple of bigger storms possible throughout the area. But yeah, let's get some more precip down to our south and west, western Dakotas, western Nebraska, they need the precip bad, and instead they're getting record heat and windy conditions, exactly what they do not need, for sure.
Well, the wind is certainly probably the bigger concern that we have going on at this point right now. I mean, there's once that wind picks up, there is no way to stop what's happening, right? There's not enough fire breaks, et cetera. People are trying, right? They're getting in front of them as much as they can, hopefully to contain some, and certainly having to do some digging up some fire breaks, trying to do anything they can really to get livestock out of the way, cutting fences, if you can do that, livestock will take off on their own and hopefully be able to find a safe place to go. Some folks will even try to herd them kind of back and around so that the cattle are back on a burned area so that they are safe, because they may not have pasture to graze on right there, but you can get them safe and then you can figure out a way to get them out of there and get them to some place where you can start feeding them again, etc. So that's the plan at this point for many of them. Now, for this weather report that's brought to us by Progressive Ag Risk Management Specialists, and for any calls and questions that you want to make today, you can do that on our JLA insurance phone line. That number is 701-293-9000. Today is the day. Today is the deadline that you need to be talking about crop insurance with Nate Thorsrud. That is when the sign up is due, is today. So for the 2026 year, you're looking at higher premium subsidies, more coverage options, and then stronger benefits for beginning farmers. Talk to Nate. You can reach him at jlainsurance.com, and you can call us on our phone line, 701-293-9000. Lighthouse Commodities does a great job of taking care of our live streams, and that's on Acres TV, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you go back and look at Friday's show, I tried to show as many photos as I could of what I was seeing at the Grand Forks Farm Toy Show that I was attending. And I even sent some extras afterwards. So Addison, if you just decide that you want to show off the things that I sent to you for photos, you're more than welcome. There were some great displays. My favorite was a very studious young man made a farm display. And for sugar beets, he used black peppercorns for each one of the beets. They were glued down in tiny rows. That took a lot of work, but it was really, really nice to watch. And again, you'll be able to find that and others on our live stream brought to us by Lighthouse Commodities. Now we're taking emails. I've already got a couple from folks with questions, and our emails are powered by Superior Grain Equipment because they want to protect your farm's future, not only with Superior Grain Storage, Drying, and Handling Solutions, and you can find that at superiorbins.com, but they want to make sure that our email is brought to you. Again, Dean is weather@flagfamily.com. I'm ag@flagfamily.com. And Addison is showing my sugar beet field that I was just talking about that was done on a 1/64th scale demo, if you will, while I was at the Grand Forks Farm Toy Show on Friday. A lot of F's, and I got all of them right, you guys. Just a heads up. I did not get a chance to see what any of our interns who are sponsored by Cass County Farm Bureau, but we will see them next week. Those are our assistant ag directors. And if you're interested in applying, we're still happy to take applications throughout the summer months. Love to have students join us and be a part of the show, ask questions, and help visit and interview with guests as well. And that is brought to us by Cass County Farm Bureau. They will be sponsoring students who are joining us during the WDAY Radio Farm Show. That's next Thursday. That's March 26th, and it's going to go on all day here on WDAY Radio from 8:30 a.m. to 5 o'clock p.m. There is a lot going on today. I, in fact, was putting my notes together of what's going to happen every hour. And we're going to kick things off with some farmer entrepreneurs and businesses that are going to be important to your farm and ranch. We're going to have our livestock experts come in and answer that inevitable question from the consumers: why is my beef cost so high? We're going to look at agronomy. We are going to talk about some ag tech and equipment. We're going to talk about farm financial health and overall farmer health as well. And I have a farmer panel that's built up. So you get to do Q&A with farmers, all the questions that you want to ask and things that they can help share from farmers in our region. So much to come. And again, that will be on Thursday, March 26th. Mark your calendars for the WDAY Radio Farm Show, brought to us in part by Landmark Company, Mosaic Company, Peterson Farm Seed, and Dynamic Cropping Systems. All right. Even Addison, I saw in the last part of the video, you even showed the trains that I made sure to capture for you. Little grain trains.
I like it. I really appreciated it.
I thought of you right away when I saw them. I knew you'd be happy to see that. So after the American Ag Network's Livestock Report, we are going to be joined by Kevin Olson. He is with Lasco's Lightning Weeder. We've talked about different types of weed control before, whether it's with herbicide, whether it's with tillage, etc. And here's one more option for people to be looking at. I saw this during the Dry Bean Expo and Sugar Beet Institute up in Grand Forks. Got some information on it. Now we've got an opportunity to talk with the folks at Lasco and learn more when we return. So often here on Weather and Ag in Focus, you hear me talk about Tech Support Farm and the things that Chris Sherman can help do to improve your cybersecurity on farm and at your agribusiness. Well, good news. He will be joining us on the WDAY Radio Farm Show next Thursday for one of our segments. Chris will be talking from a very technical point of view about what you need to be thinking of, how some of that security works in the background. He uses terms I'm not always familiar with, but yet he can explain them, and it also helps me understand why I need better protection for my email and so much more from hackers, spoofers, and everybody else who's out there trying to do something to get my money. So we'll have Chris joining us, and in the meantime, you can go to techsupport.farm and do a fence check assessment right there online. We are joined today by Kevin Olson, and Kevin is with Lasco Laser Weeders. So, Kevin, how are you today?
I'm great, thanks.
Okay, let's get started with, where did the concept of a laser weeder come from?
It's actually lightning weeder. But what we have
weeder.
The ability
Excuse me,
to
lightning
do,
weeder.
Yes, yep. What we do is we have the ability to produce electricity off the PTO generator of a tractor, and then that electricity is backfed into a transformer, boosted up to in excess of 20,000 volts, and then we take and apply that to the weeds that grow over the top of the canopy of our crop, whether it be sugar beets, potatoes, virtually any crop that you can drive through with a row crop tractor.
You know, so often we have folks say, this seems like a new concept in weed control, but I don't think it is.
No, actually, the lightning weeder was developed back in the late 70s and early 80s. We had many, many, many units through the Red River Valley that we used in sugar beets in the early days. Back in the day, we had chemical resistant weeds, much like we do now. And it was produced to control redwood, pigweed, lamb's quarters, and basically kochia in sugar beets back in the 80s.
So, all right, let's start out with this question. How does it work? I heard you talk about generating the power, et cetera, but realistically, how big is the unit, and how does it actually work on the back of a tractor?
So the unit itself is a three-point attachment. It's got grounding coulters that run right in the tracks of the tires. Those grounding coulters produce a ground plane throughout the earth so that when we contact that weed, it actually has a place to return that voltage back to the generator-transformer combination. So what happens is when you're sitting in the tractor and you turn the key on for our equipment, the screen will come up. We'll go through a series of questions, and at that point, you can see on the screen that it's ready to operate. We start the PTO. The PTO turns the generator. The generator will produce 230, 240 volts, which we can control directly from the screen. That voltage is then produced, and the tractor has to be moving, so we'll get the tractor moving in a forward direction about a half a mile an hour to a mile per hour. And at that point, there will be a green square on the control panel that says start. You push and hold that for 2 seconds and it'll energize the applicator bar. What happens at that point is that voltage then is transferred to the front applicator bar, which is hydraulically elevated and tilted from the cab. And then we can actually adjust that to follow the top of the canopy of the crop. Then anything that above that canopy, whether it be water hemp or redwood pigweed or marsh elder, whatever that weed might be that's the problem, we can contact that with the applicator bar. That voltage is forced through that plant. And when that happens, it creates a tremendous amount of heat. And what that heat does is it blows the cells up in the plant and destroys that plant from the basically from the leaf all the way through the roots.
Okay, so it's actually conducted through the whole plant. So it's not just zapping the top and the growth point. It's going to go further through that plant for more accurate control of the plant, correct?
Correct. It goes all the way through the root system and destroys the entire root system.
Okay, I'm trying to make notes as fast as I think of them here to ask questions. Let's continue on the size of the equipment, et cetera. How big a horsepower tractor are we talking about to use this unit?
Hey, we've got a couple of different units. We have a small unit for the smaller farmers, the maybe 20-30 acre farmers that only have 50 horsepower. We also have units that are available that run all the way up to 350 horsepower.
Okay.
Basically, what's going to determine is what the farmer has for a tractor. What's nice about our Lightning Weeder is that we can actually set it up to match the horsepower of the tractor rather than you having to buy a tractor to match the Lightning Weeder. So in our control system, we have what's called a current limit, and we can set that to match. So if you have a 125 to 130 horsepower tractor, we can match that horsepower. If you've got a 225 horsepower tractor, we can match that horsepower. If you have a 300 horsepower tractor, we can match that horsepower. And then what happens or what changes then is the length of the applicator bar. So with a smaller horsepower tractor, you're not going to be able to run a 40, 44 foot bar. You're only going to run maybe a 20 to 24 foot bar.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Remind me again, how long you have the varying length of the applicator bar. So you said it can be anywhere from 20, 30 feet to what's like your maximum size so we can figure out how many rows you'd be covering, that type of thing.
44 feet is our biggest applicator bar.
44 feet is the largest. Okay. And I'm taking notes like I'm shopping.
Yeah. And Kevin, what's the benefit of the Lightning Weeder opposed to fighting weeds in the traditional method? Is this more cost effective? Is it better results?
The results are fabulous. You know, what's happening now is we're getting chemical resistant weeds. And the more resistance those weeds have to the chemicals, the less effective they become. Mm. We've got farmers out there that will apply, you know, 3-4 trips over the field and still have water hemp in their field. There is no resistance that can build up to the Lightning Weeder. Anything that contacts that bar will die.
Well, and I think you make a great point there, Kevin, that with water hemp, it continually comes through the plant canopy, right? As long as it has some access to sunlight and water, water hemp will come flush after flush throughout the field. And you may approach a time where you're trying to spray typical applications and now your crop is too big and you aren't able to spray anymore. Or if the weed, especially if the water hemp got away from you because it rained, you can't get in there to spray. This would be an excellent benefit because we got to use multiple modes of action. And this Lightning Weeder, lightning could be another method besides tillage or spray or anything like that. So
it's a very, very good tool for your toolbox.
Like
everything else.
One more way.
Yep, it's just another way of killing the weeds and another approach. Like I said, I've been doing this since the early 80s, and we've redeveloped and redesigned the whole machine at this point. We've got a brand new control panels, and the Coulter arms and everything are new. And so it's a brand new, very innovative at this point to do the job that we need to do out there in the field.
You said the dashboard is new. Is this connecting through some sort of a cable from the Lightning Weeder up to the cab? So you almost have like an iPad or something that you're using as your control monitor in the cab?
It is a touchscreen. It's called an HMI. It's much like the screen that you would have in your car. So basically you touch the screen and you can adjust your voltage from there. You can adjust your current from there. You monitor all of your interlocks to make sure that all the safety features are in operating condition. If any of those should fail or if you have an open in any of those systems, you'll get a fault that tells you what to look for.
Okay.
So, yeah, there is a cable that comes from the machine. Yep. Cable that comes from the back, comes into the tractor cab. Virtually the only thing that you need in the tractor would be a 12-volt power supply to plug into.
Kevin, we have lots more questions, things that are coming in that we want you to answer. Things like, how about safety in the field, whether it's to the operator or someone who might also be in the field? Can wet or dry soils impact the control or the efficacy of using this in field with plants and so much more? So we'll ask you those questions after we return from our bottom of the hour news. We've been talking with Kevin Olson with Lasco's Lightning Weeder. because we need to have as many opportunities to control weeds in field in a variety of ways possible. And this takes us a little bit out of that traditional realm of chemistry and tillage into something very new. And so, all right, Kevin, a couple of questions that we've been getting here. Safety. Is there ever a concern of safety, whether it's to the operator in the tractor or anybody else in the field? You know, that farm kid thing. Dad said, don't stick your hand there. And then you did.
And then you did. the operator is very safe. We have what's called a tether switch, much like in a boat or something. So if you leave the seat, it shuts the machine off. Most modern tractors also shut the PTO off as soon as you leave the seat. So the operator is very safe. There is a risk for somebody to contact that bar out in the field. We don't recommend anybody be within 50 to 100 feet of the lightning weeder when it's operating. So you want to keep your dog at home. Don't let that follow you out in the field and things like that. But the machine is very safe. In order for it to actually start or operate, like I say, the machine has to be down in contact with the coulters in the ground. It has to be moving forward at a half a mile an hour. And the reason for that is I feel that people are a lot less likely to walk up to something that's moving than if it were standing still. We do have a big red strobe light on the back as well. So when it's energized, everybody knows that it's live.
Well, I think that's a pretty good idea. It's like the big hazard lights on tractors and so forth, you know, the LEDs that are spinning for road gear, et cetera. Okay. You mentioned a speed of about a half mile an hour. Is there a maximum speed that we can get to, or is it dependent on crop canopy, et cetera?
Correct. The speed is actually just a minimum speed that so the tractor has to be moving in a forward forward position going forward, what I'm trying to say. The maximum speed is kind of determined by your weed pressure and the ability of the tractor to contact those the weeds in the field. About 2 to 4 miles an hour is normal operating speed. The heavier the canopy, the slower you're going to have to go. And the smaller the plants that we're trying to kill, the earlier we're doing it in the season, the slower you're going to want to go to keep that canopy, the bar right on top of the canopy, so it doesn't kill your host crop.
When you are thinking about how much you can get done in a day, do you ever give an estimate to farmers? You know, a lot of times we want to hear, I can at least get, you know, 2 quarters done, whatever that case might be. Are you able to give a description like that, or do you tell them, hey guys, it's really up to you and what's happening in that particular field?
Every field is different. Moisture content and things just kind of determined some of that. On a 30-foot applicator bar, an average is about 15 acres an hour. That's kind of an average.
Okay. So another question that I have, how would this differ from fire? Because I've seen the propane burners that can go down the field. I know there's a pretty big difference between them. Again, we're talking about electricity versus propane. But I think this question was from the listener more about what are the differences when it comes to size, bulk, horsepower needed, compaction in the field, anything like that.
So the primary difference between a lightning weeder and a flamer is they're both doing the same thing. They're forcing that moisture out of the plant. They're forcing it to boil out and destroy the cells. The lightning weeder goes all the way through the root, whereas with a flamer, it stops right at the soil level. So those weeds will basically regrow from the root, whereas with the lightning weeder, they don't get that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So that's the primary difference between a flamer. Now, the flamer, what that happens with that is they use it primarily in corn, primarily organics, and the flamer will set our crop back, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. And a lot of times we don't have 2 to 3 weeks in our northern climates here to recover.
No, we don't. Our growing season needs every bit we can take. And if you run into some concerns with weather, that can be a stumbling block that lasts for quite some time. Soils. A question also is the kill of the plant better if the soils are wet versus dry, or does that not matter whatsoever with what we're doing here with the Lasco Lightning Weeder?
It does affect our abilities. So like the sandier soils, we typically run a little bit higher voltage because the soil is a little less conductive. The heavy clay soils, like mostly through the valley, we could operate at our standard 210 volt output. We do have the ability to drop our voltage. So like in the evening when the dew comes on, we've got weed pressure like grasses and things like that. When the dew comes on, they actually do conduct better. Grasses have a small surface area to contact. So if you can enhance that with a little bit of moisture, that actually enhances our performance as far as a kill is concerned.
Okay. Let's talk about the plants that are most effectively controlled. Are there certain plants that are more susceptible, if you will, than others? You know, if there's a plant that's got a higher moisture content, is it a faster kill? Those types of things.
Yes, absolutely. So we take like a ragweed or we take a red root pigweed or something like that with mostly a single stem. Those weeds are very easy to kill. They have high moisture content. Canadian thistle, milkweed. Those weeds are very, very conductive. Now we take a plant like mustard, wild mustard, or we take a plant like kochia. That's a bushier plant. And those plants are tougher to get a conductivity to the ground, whereas they will kill better with a dew on, so we can enhance that conductivity of that plant.
So when you have kochia or wild mustard, a volunteer canola, do you just stop and wait a little while and hope it gets a bigger dose than what you were doing otherwise?
Slowing down does help that as well. The problem with going slow when the weeds get tall is then we start dragging that weed that's right next to it for the full length of that bar and for the length of the weed, for the height of that weed. And then the more current paths that we have in the field, the less effective that the lightning weeder becomes. So you want to minimize the number of weeds at a contact. So in the tall, heavy patches, it's best to raise the applicator bar up and just touch the top of the plants rather than drag the entire length of that plant if they've gotten away on us.
Okay. Okay, that makes a bit more sense. So can a farmer do maintenance on this piece of equipment themselves, or is it best to have someone from your company working on them so no one gets hurt?
There is very little maintenance that's involved. There's grease circs basically on the power shaft on the drive line. There's grease circs on the grounding coulters. The major wear point is the grounding coulters themselves. If you got abrasive soil in a period of 2-3 years, you'll burn them discs down. And you want to keep them discs so that they're full length or at least close to it so we get good conductivity with the soil. But other than that, the generator requires virtually no maintenance whatsoever. The transformers have no maintenance whatsoever. The breaking points, there's a drive belt there, and then there's some porcelains for insulators. Those are basically the only points that would be serviceable or would ever create a problem.
Okay. Well, that leads to that last question. And can it be stored outside? Because not everybody has room inside a machine shed. It looks to be like it's a piece of equipment that's pretty weatherproof if we're out in the rain. Like you said, we talked about heavy dew. But if we got to store it over the winter and we don't have room in a barn or a shed, can it be outside or is that going to be destructive to the
equipment? No, it can be outside.
Okay.
No, there's no problem with sitting outside. The only thing you'd have to watch for is rodents building a nest inside the generator. And then that creates heating problems.
I hate to tell that mouse. Yeah, that mouse is going to have a real bad day when this thing gets fired up.
It's going to be a bad day. But the control panel is the only thing that we would want to keep inside so that it wasn't subjected to water or rain or anything like that.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, I saw you at the Dry Bean Expo and Sugar Beet Institute in Grand Forks in January. Hopefully, folks are able to find you in other places. And which ones would they be, whether it's online or in person?
We're online. LascoLightningWeeder.com. LightningWeeder.com. We also have a phone number of 218-791-6536 and Right now, we don't have any more shows scheduled. We did the Dry Bean Show and Sugar Beet Show. We've done Iowa, Nebraska, California, and all over. So we've been busy with the show circuit, but that's about done for the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, now it's just time for people to find you in person and take a look at this piece of equipment. Do you have any dealers out there that people could stop by and take a look at it?
We're setting up dealers now as we speak, and I'm glad you brought that up because we are looking for dealers. We're in the process of setting up one down in Glidden, Minnesota, and we're talking to people here and there. Right now, it's pretty much factory direct is what we're looking at.
Okay. Well, if people are interested in handling this as a piece of equipment in a short line for their operation, this would be a great conversation to have with Kevin. So much appreciated your time today, Kevin. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to have a recap of the weather, and there is a sign of spring-like warmth finally heading our way. But there's also more snow in the forecast as well. We'll give you the details coming up in a few minutes. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And temperatures out there, anywhere between about 7 and 12 degrees. This feels more like January out there as, well, the major spring/winter storm that traversed the northern plains now into the Great Lakes has pulled in some modified Arctic air into our area. Not record-setting by any means. Record low on this date is 32 below. Sorry. So nowhere near that. But, again, some pretty cold weather. But warmer weather heading our way again. We do have snow in the forecast for tomorrow. Your morning commute is going to be just fine. But as we head towards lunchtime, we'll start to see snow spreading in from the north and west. And we'll continue with snow throughout the day tomorrow. Should be done by around 6 or so. So your evening commute could be a little bit slippery, about 1 to 2 inches. It's on a warm front. And behind that warm front, much warmer temperatures back into the 40s and 50s. For the rest of the week. So we'll warm up, we'll melt away all the snow that's on the ground as we head into Friday and even into the weekend. We'll stay mild on Saturday before slightly colder weather comes in on Sunday. And it looks like next week, according to the LRC, we do have a chance for another winter weather maker coming our way. So as soon as we see that sign or taste of spring, seems like Mother Nature is not ready to let go in terms of winter. So even after tomorrow's snow, I don't believe we're done for the season, as we'll have at least another storm next week and then probably one more in that first week in April before we finally see a more consistent spring weather pattern. And let's hope so. We can get some much needed moisture once we get the ground thawed out here as we head into the month of April.
Oh, I would say that it won't take very long. You know, the last time we talked about the frost depth, I did have a listener remind me or sent me a message through Facebook Messenger, which I should go check if they're listening now, and said that at that point in time, Endon showed the frost was only about 18 inches deep down there. So really, this isn't going to take very long at all.
No, we checked. I believe we checked last week.
Fast.
Yeah, when you were gone last week, Bridget, I believe it was at 12 inches. So it's already... It's already starting to to improve. Yeah, quickly this time of the year too.
Yeah, and we're not going to be surprised at that. You have told us that the chances of an early spring, if you will, are rather high. So let's stick with that, shall we?
Yeah, and it does look like it. In fact, Jay Thomas was just giving me grief here. He just popped in the studio. He said, "Wait, I thought you said we were going to flip the switch." I said, "No, we were going to see a nice sign of spring, but I said don't think we're not going to get any snow in April." I mean, I'd have to go back and check the records to see when the last time we had a totally snow free April. But we've got real quick. We've got Trucker Al. He's on line one. Al, what's going on?
Hey, buddy. So I was supposed to go to Des Moines yesterday. Well, that never happened.
Yeah,
I still got to go there today. That's not going to happen either. But tomorrow. So, two questions. Is 35W going to be open by tomorrow down there in Minnesota and Iowa?
For sure.
Am I going to have weather?
Yeah, no, it will be open for sure. In fact, they'll probably have that open by later today as Windsor already lightening up down there. I know 90 was shut down too, I believe still is.
Yep. In Minnesota.
In Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I know 35 just opened up going into Des Moines. From what I last heard, it will be much improved tomorrow. And again, the snow that's coming in tomorrow, it's only about a 1 to 2, 1 to 3 inch snowfall. So it shouldn't pose you too much of a problem there, Al.
No wind?
There will be some wind with that tomorrow, 15 to 30. So we will be dealing with some blowing snow, but nothing like the last storm we just had. No.
Okay. Cool. Cool. Okay. Thanks.
Safe travels, Al. You got it. You got it. So yeah, like Trucker L said, winter, yeah, just not wanting to let go. Not, you know, I can't imagine, you know, the truckers down to our south having to endure some of the road conditions for sure.
Well, I get it, and they all know that when conditions strike, you got to take it easy. Mm-hmm. I've got folks on their way up here from Oklahoma, and they know that they're going to have to plan accordingly, and depending on where they want to be driving, etc., what can, you know, work best, what won't. So yeah, there's a lot to take into consideration. When it comes to transportation, that's probably going to be a greater concern for us when it comes to diesel fuel, etc., with all of the things that are going on with Iran, versus what we're even thinking about with fertilizer. Fertilizer's in a situation that's not good either, because right now, as we look at the fertilizer market, roughly a fifth of the global phosphate fertilizers need to come through that Strait of Hormuz, and about a third of global urea, which is our nitrogen source for many crops. So if that's not happening right now, and even if they loaded a ship today and it was safely able to travel, it could be 4 to 6 weeks before that product winds up in a fertilizer shed that could go out to a field. So we're going to have this big backlog. Some farmers didn't do their purchases like they normally might in December, hoping that there would be a better pricing situation the closer we got to spring. Now that's not happening. As shippers have gotten nervous about sending product, that shipping insurance has got up. That's raised the price of the product overall. When you have a tight supply and a heavy demand, you're always going to see price increases happening. Will the fertilizer situation impact grocery store pricing? Not until about a year from now, because we're going to have to try to grow the crop that we need for 2026, which then becomes ingredients for 2027. But shipping and transportation costs, as we watch diesel fuel climb, that's going to be our greater concern and what's going to add to the bottom line overall on top of food inflation that we're currently experiencing. So call it what you will, whether it's inflation, whether it's tariffs, et cetera, there's always something that's impacting us, and it's happening in places that the farmer doesn't get a handle on, and fuel is one of them.
Yeah, well, hopefully that does get better, no doubt about it. And that'll do it for today's Weather and Ag in Focus, but don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas finally back from his extended vacation. He'll be coming up next.